It is good to be home. And I offer thanks to Nancy and to the entire congregation for inviting me back to be part of worship here, in a place that has been such a gift to me and such a special place to take a journey with such amazing people. And now, will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. The same crowd from our reading today, that same crowd just one day before had followed Jesus out into the wilderness. They were hungry. Hungry for hope, hungry for signs, hungry for a new beginning. They followed Jesus, the Jesus that people called prophet, Lamb of God, Son of God, Son of Man, and even Messiah. And after Jesus fed all 5,000 of them with a few loaves and a couple of fishes, this crowd remembered how God had fed their ancestors manna from heaven, and they were ready to call him king. So Jesus slipped away. But our story begins the next day. On that next day, the same crowd sought out Jesus again. They were still hungry, but on that day, they called Jesus Rabbi. In the verses right before our reading today, this crowd turned to Jesus and called him Rabbi. Teacher. Rabbi is, after all, the title most frequently given to Jesus throughout the Gospels. Teacher. Now, all of us have had experience with teachers, I would guess, in our lives. Some good, some bad, and some ugly. Each of us, I would imagine, have had teachers who were gifted, demanding, and somewhat crazy, and sometimes my best teachers were a little of all three. It was eighth grade when I met my first great teacher. His name was Mr. Freidinger. And while he taught literature, I learned so much more. I learned that there are no simple answers to complex questions. I learned, despite my own complaints, that every answer we come up with invariably and inevitably offers new questions waiting to be explored. But you know what? It wasn't just what he taught me. It was how he taught me. Every day, exactly at 8:40 a.m., every day, precisely as the bell rang, he would come into the classroom. Every day, he wore the exact same corduroy pants, the same really broad colored dress shirt, and the same sweater vest. Every day. He would place his worn briefcase on the table in front of him. He would flip open both latches, smile, and ask, "Are you ready to learn?" Every day, he extended an invitation, a chance to swap those things that we thought we knew for the chance to discover even deeper things, to take a leap of faith. But wrapped in that invitation was a promise. The offer was to always prepare us for the leap we would take and to be there to pick us up should we fall. The crowd sought signs and Jesus offered substance. The crowd wanted gifts and Jesus offered the chance to give of themselves. The crowd wanted answers and Jesus gave them new questions to ponder. But isn't that, after all, what great teachers do? They invite us to come up to the very edge of what we know, and instead of being confined by those barriers we find, they invite us to break through. And while later we may thank them for it, and even love or respect them for it, at the time, we usually blame them for it. So when this crowd came to Jesus seeking more signs, seeking more miracles, seeking more bread, he gave them an invitation instead. He taught them to believe, for Jesus is that bread, and he is with them always. And so this crowd, they grumbled just a bit. Coming up against a barrier, they asked, "How can this man be bread?" But like our best, most annoying teachers, Jesus didn't even pause. He went on to tell them that not only is he this living bread from heaven, he says, "Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you." So we should hardly be surprised when the crowd grumbled just a little bit more. How are we supposed to eat this man's flesh? How do we drink his blood? Now, some 2,000 years later, having inherited the Christian life of ritual and meaning, we here in this place might sit back and feel just a little too comfortable. For in all of this talk of eating flesh and drinking blood, in those words, we are comfortable because we hear Jesus talking about communion, one of our most important rituals. And he is. But in the back of my mind, I also hear Mr. Freidinger whispering a warning in my ear. What if Jesus here is giving not a final answer, but an answer that brings about a new invitation? Well, that might make us just a little less comfortable, because here in America, here in Boston, we like our answers and rules and plans. Oh, we may romanticize about the idea of boldly going where no one has gone before, but secretly, we prefer our GPS systems to show us exactly where we are going before we have even left the driveway. We like our truth backed up by facts and figures and research. We like the truth that already exists and sits out there just waiting for us to discover it. But what if? What if in this lesson, Jesus is giving us an invitation to discover a different kind of truth, a truth that exists in relationship with him and with one another, a truth that emerges from dialogue, a truth that includes mystery, a truth that is ever unfolding before us? What if in our text today, Jesus is not giving a final answer, a climactic ending around the table? But what if instead he is extending both an invitation and a promise? What if this eating and drinking is a chance to take a leap of faith into a new beginning? Throughout his teachings, Jesus repeatedly asks that we hold nothing back, that we give all of ourselves to him and to one another. That is our invitation, our leap of faith. In this passage, Jesus tells us we must eat of his flesh. A leap indeed. And the Greek word that's used here for eating is neither dainty nor polite. It means to devour, to gnaw on, to consume. The noun form of this Greek verb, in fact, means glutton. Jesus is not asking us to nibble at the edges here. Jesus is asking us to devour, to take him so fully into our own lives that we become one with him, that we become transformed, that we are able to say, like the great Apostle Paul in his letter to the Galatians, "No longer I, but Christ who lives in me." So what if this feasting is not an ending, but a beginning? Carved above the portico in the Roxbury pudding stone on the outside of this very building are words that are central to the life of this church, words that provide comfort to the afflicted and set a wide welcome. If you know these words, if you have been coming here for a while and you are familiar with these words, I ask you to say them with me out loud right now. "Behold, I have set before thee an open door." Friends, that open door, this church, is not our finish line. It is an invitation to a new beginning. When this church was founded because it believed that baptism was a precious gift, one that should be more open and available, that was not a final answer. Rather, an invitation to consider more broadly who is welcome. when a prominent member of this church repented of his role in the so-called witch trials. He was not giving just a final answer to his own painful history. Rather, he was giving an invitation to the whole church to humbly recognize our ability, even in the name of God, to do wrong. He was giving an invitation to explore better ways to deal with mystery and things we do not yet understand. When this church became open and affirming, it was not a final answer of how lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered brothers and sisters fit into our notion of church. It was an invitation to those who were hungry to join the feast. One that brought new gifts to this place. An invitation to more broadly consider our call to welcome all who are hungry and oppressed, and to continue actively thinking about who those people might yet still be. Transformations that continue to uncover new leaps of faith that wait in front of us. Transformations that have led us to plant a food garden, to knit prayer shawls, to stand for justice, even if it means painfully standing in the uncomfortable middle. Transformations that call us to be open to new invitation that God places before us. For in each new answer, there are always new questions. But isn't that what Jesus offered that crowd on that day and offers us on this one? A life of accepting his invitation and the reality that in doing so, we not only transform the world, but we ourselves are transformed. But, my friends, to see this passage only as an invitation, only as an invitation to serve and to leap, would be missing the true beauty of what is here. For in this passage, the greatest teacher of all gives us the greatest promise of all. Jesus, the incarnate God, offers us his whole self, his very flesh and blood, his whole life, all of his teachings, and yes, even his death and resurrection, to prepare us to face new barriers, to sustain us, give us courage to leap, and to pick us up when we stumble. In John's Gospel, after this lesson about flesh and blood, Jesus continued to teach his followers many things. And then, on the night in which he was betrayed, he gathered his best and closest students together for a meal. But in the Gospel of John, unlike the story in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus did not institute the ritual of communion around a table. At this Last Supper, instead, Jesus rose up from that table. Jesus tied his garment around his waist. Jesus knelt before his disciples. Jesus filled a basin with water, and he washed their feet. And his disciples grumbled just a bit. Jesus had brought them to another barrier, and despite Peter's protest, Jesus invited them through and told them that they ought to do the same for one another in remembrance of him. And so today, following worship, each of you are invited to take this ritual blessing of transformation. Right after worship is ended, here in the sanctuary, if you go out those doors at the back and into the Gordon Chapel, you will find the Children's Chapel. There, you are invited to be served. You were invited to take a leap of faith into new relationship with one another. Oh, and for those of you who worry about your feet and how they might look or smell or feel, remember that Jesus washed the feet of whom undoubtedly looked, smelled, and felt a whole lot worse, and Jesus did it during dinner. Friends, the invitation is forever before us, the chance to take a leap of faith, to let go of what we know for the hope of something deeper. But so too, the promise of Jesus is always with us. Do we dare to really feast on Christ, to be gluttons of his flesh and blood that we might be transformed and serve others? Do we dare to trust the promise and allow ourselves to be served, allow our feet to be washed so that we might never forget? Do we dare open these doors to this magnificent church even wider? Do we dare open our minds to even greater mysteries? Do we dare to take those truths and those answers that we hold most dear and see them as an invitation with a promise to find the questions that still lie inside of them? Brothers and sisters, before Jesus commissioned his disciples to go out and feed his sheep, Jesus fed his disciples. And he offers us the same sustenance today. Come, let us take this leap of faith together, knowing that life will never be the same. Knowing, though, that we are forever secure in God's promise, this and every day. Do we dare?